Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and in today's episode, I'm speaking with Krista Biegler, award-winning dietitian, root cause nutritionist, and the owner of Less Stressed Life Nutrition. Krista and I spoke about reflux, indigestion and heartburn, autoimmune issues and stress, and why change feels so hard. If you like the show, please subscribe and give us a rating or share the episode with someone who might find it helpful. Thank you so much. And as always, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes. Now onto my conversation with Krista. Krista Biegler, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Lisa.
I'm really excited to speak with you. Really excited to talk about all things gut health and everything that you specialize in. And I would love to hear from you. What are you excited for the listener to take away from our conversation?
Yeah, I think this year I feel like it was a year of really streamlining things. And so I think that so often we have something pop up in our health and things can be a little bit whack-a-mole-ish. And so this year I spend a lot of time streamlining and there's a couple expressions I might want to share. And the first is that sensitivities are always signals, or all symptoms are just signals from the body. And the other one is that supporting all those signals point to different systems. And when you know how to support systems, you can correct all of those symptoms. And so I think that those are just some helpful things to keep in mind as we kind of go forward. Like, everything is just a skill to build, to learn. And when we kind of think about it like that, it takes some of the pressure off and the frustration that maybe something is happening. And it sort of just lightens it up a little bit. And it reminds us that when we learn this skill once, it's something we can use again to keep our health more optimal overall.
That's so empowering. I absolutely love it. And I think what that points towards also is that having a specialist like yourself or so look at certain symptoms is really helpful, because I believe as an individual, when a symptom pops up, we automatically think like this is this is connected to X, whereas you know, and I think in the back of our minds, we all know that it's not so linear. Like, it might be, you know, your skin might be telling you that there is something wrong with your gut, but your gut is actually telling you that you're responding so in such and such way because of your stress, and the stress is linked to this. And so having someone like connect all the dots is really helpful, I believe. So yeah, excited to talk about that in detail. And tell us a little bit about your own journey, why you are doing what you're doing, or how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, I think I'll try to succinctly tell you about my health crises. A little over a decade ago, I woke up one morning. Now, of course, I was probably getting a lot of little whispers from my body long before this, and I'll make this version a little bit shorter, but I woke up one morning with a rash all over my eyes and my neck. It was a stressful period of life. I was changing careers. I had two toddlers and we had just gone to the pool 5 days in a row, but this was abnormal for me because before that, I thought that I just had a little bit of dry skin in the winter. I never had anything like this. And so when this happened, it was kind of stark. And of course, I did what most sane people would do, and I wanted to find someone to fix it for me as soon as possible. I struggled to find someone to help me fix it. I saw a famous gut health doctor who told me I could do nothing because nothing showed up on my test results. I saw lots of different practitioners. I saw lots of alternative providers. I went home with hundreds of dollars worth of supplements at different appointments. And ultimately, I was just pretty disappointed by how shallow the toolbox was. So I really dug into the research. I ended up creating like some more severe food reactions and sensitivities in myself from restricting food. And I had to kind of crawl out of that from a research rabbit hole and trying to hire different mentors, et cetera. So that was a little over a decade ago. A few years after that, I was working for a fitness influencer, a famous fitness influencer, and she was starting perimenopause and starting to gain weight and was having to work out all the time. And so I was part of a small team that helped develop a program that was related to intermittent fasting. It was a hot mess behind the scenes, to be honest. The program development, and that was interesting. I always think behind the scenes is really interesting. But as a result of that process of developing that program or helping to develop content for that program, I was doing some intermittent fasting, but I was also in a high, like I was seeing 9 or 10, like between 8 and 10 people a day, like hour after hour, right? And so I was just kind of in a high stress, like I was going from meeting to meeting to meeting, and I was doing this intermittent fasting thing, and I was doing something that is really common for humans. You start off with a good intention, but before you know it, you're just having coffee for breakfast and lunch, right? And spiking your cortisol. And so you're under eating. And so what happened was I kind of destroyed my metabolic rate and my stress hormone function at that time. Like I crashed my adrenals and my thyroid. And this is pretty important because when your thyroid is sluggish, you're going to have relapse of gut issues overall. And so this is where all the systems are kind of tied together. I'm really passionate about relapse prevention. I'm passionate about these specific. I think that women who have sluggish thyroid and depleted adrenals slip through the cracks all the time because we have really no medical. We don't have good medical testing or care around these topics, in my opinion. If your thyroid is really, really, really off, it'll show up on your blood work, but by then it's pretty significantly off. And so you can really take care of things long before that if you start to recognize those signals from your body. And I think this is especially important probably for your audience, because anyone who's a high achiever, like I'm definitely a high achiever, performer. And this is a topic that's really near and dear to me because this unconscious stress is where we're like, it's already our baseline. So it's like hard for us to even realize is really just something that tugs at my heartstrings because what you can get, there are some testing options that will show you what's going on, but it's sort of like a come to Jesus moment a little bit here where it's like, oh, I'm not able to really focus like I was able to, right? I never would have said like, oh, I think I have thyroid stuff. Like, I'm like, oh, I have dry skin. I have, slow motility or like relapsing gut issues. And then I feel like I have ADHD. Those were my symptoms related to thyroid. Like I was like having trouble focusing or jumping around to things. When I started supporting thyroid health with nutrient cofactors, like I was like, who is this woman? She is so focused. She is so just so capable of like staying on one topic and finishing it. And I think this is interesting or important just because you mentioned something at the beginning related to like high performance and achievement and whatnot. And I think it's just so common for us to just sort of ignore little things or to be told, this is an area that's a challenge because we're told like, oh, you're just getting older or you just have kids. And I'm here to say like, no, there's actually a lot you can do. It's just that it's hard, it's about putting the information in your hands, I guess, is the simplest way to put it. So I'm here to try to help with that because it's such an area where you will get lost in the cracks in so many ways. You were talking about a symptom earlier, and I wanted to just mention how like brain fog is not always a symptom that we always resonate with. So I always use like squirrel brain as well as one of them, or like trouble focusing. And that can be related to so many different systems. It could be gut health. Like if you're having those symptoms after a meal, there's a pretty good chance you're not digesting nutrients and maybe there's some dysbiosis, meaning weeds in the gut, and you're feeding those accidentally with undigested foods. And then they give off their own endotoxins or like seeds, if they're a dandelion, and then those cross the gut-brain barrier, and then you've got brain fog, in the mid-afternoon. And so it can be a gut thing. That's also part of a drainage thing, because anything you do with gut contributes to the overall toxic burden. And so some of that can cause some brain fog, like, oh, why did I walk into this room? But it can also be adrenal thyroid. So when the thyroid is sluggish, you can also have trouble focusing or feeling like you have ADHD, et cetera. In fact, a lot of ADHD symptoms are really sluggish thyroid symptoms as well. So topics people don't really talk about, we get to talk about here today.
I think there's so many things to dig into, and I think that's again so empowering, especially for the women listening who might be going through the menopause transition. And just some of them, I am certain have made their quote unquote peace with like, oh, brain fog throughout menopause or throughout the transition is absolutely normal. That's just like what it comes with. And I mean, that might be part of it. Yes, your brain is restructuring, rewiring during this time, no question. But nonetheless, if that's been going on for a while, or if we should still address it and see what we can do about it. So I'm all about practical takeaways, and you mentioned some things here in terms of supporting a sluggish thyroid. What would be the main pillars, or how would you attack that with a client?
Yeah, I think you need to know first the hormone hierarchy in general. And maybe I should back up and just comment on what you just said related to women having more brain fog as we go into perimenopause, et cetera. So understanding the hormone hierarchy is important because to have a smoother transition into from perimenopause, which could last 9 years into menopause, you want to really support the foundation of stress hormones first. So I want you to imagine a triangle cut into three pieces, you know, in layers. The bottom of that triangle is going to be adrenal stress hormones. Then the middle is going to be thyroid, and then the top is going to be sex hormones. So I'm going to talk about it in that order because in order to, you can't even really go to thyroid until you understand a little bit about adrenals. And this is important because as your body starts to decline, as your ovaries start to decline sex hormone production, your adrenals get the brunt of the work. So your body is saying there's really two stages of life. Unfortunately, fortunately, it's childbearing and non-childbearing. And that's, you know, really, that's kind of how nature has us pegged. And so as we're not doing childbearing stuff, there's not so much growth hormone and sex hormone need, you know, from a biological standpoint. So that declines. So that's brain ovarian communication. So I like to stimulate brain and ovarian communication to preserve hormone production for as long as possible. But as that declines, and I'm just kind of repeating myself because I feel like it's a clear, like a concept we just really want, I really want to drive home. Then we've, you know, the brunt of the remaining hormone production will really be on the reliance of the adrenals. But if we have been pushing on the gas for a long time, that's one of my analogies for adrenals. Because when we know when we speed, you know, we push on the gas pedal and we're speeding through life, running from thing to thing to thing, which we very commonly do. We use up more gas or we use up more energy and we deplete more nutrients. And so all of these systems are very nutrient dependent, which is what we're going to eventually talk about here is lots of nutrients. And so when we blow through that gas or when we blow through those nutrients, our body starts to run on a reserve tank. And that's kind of what happens with the adrenals. We have cellular function decline overall. And so we're not actually producing those more essential hormones first. And so if we want to support thyroid, and so something that sometimes happens or sometimes walks into my office is someone will actually, I love to get people long before they have thyroid diagnosed because it's just easier to move the needle for them, to be honest, thyroid issues diagnosed. So before it shows up on your blood labs, if you're like, I feel like I might be losing hair. I feel like my hands and feet are cold. I feel like, you know, I have dry skin or, you know, low energy or whatever. And you already heard my symptoms. They weren't even those standard ones necessarily. It was like, oh, I just feel like I have ADHD and my motility is slow and whatnot. Like, you know, they can be a little non-traditional, but there's a long list of thyroid symptoms. I like to get people before that, because you can just do a lot faster. So back to the adrenals. I think it's just important to talk about that first because it must be. So, and cortisol sort of had a heyday this year on the internet, right? People were talking about cortisol face, et cetera. And I actually think it's more thyroid, to be honest. I think when your thyroid is sluggish, your face will be rounder or it will feel like you're, like, people will say, like, I feel fluffy or I feel like I'm retaining water. And this is all pretty important because at the base of this hormone hierarchy, the adrenals are these glands that sit in the body right above the kidneys, and they produce a few hormones. And they produce cortisol. Of course, we know that one. It spikes and then it should decline. We can talk all about cortisol if you wanted to. But the issue is that it's essential. So when the body is understaffed and overworked, it needs to downregulate production. And so it's going to downregulate sex hormone production first. It is not essential for you to make sex hormones when you need to make cortisol. Like if you need to be under stress, like it's just not a priority. And it's also not a priority to run your metabolism full speed with your thyroid either. Like it's just not necessary. What's essential and necessary is for your body to produce cortisol. So that's the most essential hormone. There's a couple other hormones that are produced by the adrenals, including DHEA and aldosterone. Aldosterone controls blood pressure, meaning not that I think your blood pressure is high. For those who have adrenal stuff, usually they're running normal to low blood pressure. And so they might be applauded by their doctor saying, like, oh, it's normal to low. And it's like, oh, well, thanks. Like for me, that looked like really, like if I give blood, it was really slow or I'd like almost pass out. Or for someone in a little more of a severe state, also, like, sitting to standing, you can feel a little dizzy or lightheaded. Or if you're doing cardio and you need a nap on the weekend, pretty good sign that your adrenals need some love. So yeah, feeling more fatigue from doing your normal stuff, usually you just start to crash, and that's a really good sign that your adrenals need love and your regular provider doesn't really have a lot of tools for this for you, unfortunately. They're typically going to just test your thyroid. And when that's normal, they're gonna be like, okay, sorry, I got nothing. Everything's normal. And that's a real bummer. And so sometimes I see people who their thyroid labs are actually off and they're put on medications, but they feel worse. It's because you don't have any other nutrient cofactors. And I want you to think about nutrient cofactors kind of like workers at the machines in the body. And so when you are understaffed, right, the machine slows down. And so that's pretty much just what happens in the body. So if you want to think about, like, if you feel like your hormones are off, you got to think about the priority of how your body has to make hormones. And does it have the raw materials? Does it have the workers to make the hormones in the first place? So I know that didn't answer your question, but in order to answer your question, we needed to start by talking about the foundation of hormones in general, which is the adrenal function. And it's the most unsung hero. And it's, to be honest, it's the unsung hero of perimenopause, because you already learned, right, that if your ovaries are declining in sex hormone production, your adrenals take the brunt. So if the adrenals are already sad and underperforming and can't produce what they can produce anyway, they're not going to be very helpful in helping you transition into perimenopause. And typically you're going to, or into menopause, and typically you're going to see more symptoms overall, I would say. So that's the starting point of the conversation. There are just so many directions we can go, and I need to answer the rest of your question. But I couldn't without talking about adrenal function first. I wanted to mention one thing. So I wanted to mention that from a perspective of testing, if you go to the doctor and you're like, hey, I'm interested in adrenal health, like, first of all, your doctor won't know too much. Second of all, doing a single cortisol test isn't very helpful because there's a range. And so that's important. And third, if you do want a test to get a screening related to adrenals, the best one that they would have is DHEA. So DHEA is also produced by the adrenals, and it helps control lipids and also blood sugar. So if you're a girl who needs to pack a lot of snacks everywhere, you might not have very good DHEA. And so, like, in general, if production is slowed down because you're understaffed, you're going to make less DHEA. And so that's going to look low. And so yeah, it's going to mean that your body is going to struggle to go more than a few hours between meals. You'll feel hangry, essentially, like really hangry, because your body doesn't have enough DHEA to kind of help buffer the blood sugar in the system to try to recruit that out to use it for energy as needed. It's understaffed overall. So those are some important things, I think, to think about before we can talk about what does your thyroid need. And I think that generally there's options around loving on your adrenals. There's a lot of nutrient options that will get you there a little faster. You can also rest and repair. Like, you can take naps and sleep 7 to 10 hours a night, and then it will take about a year to repair the adrenals and, like, change how you're processing stress in the first place. I think that's always the problem I see, or the one that breaks my heart, and hopefully we can crack that open, is like, if you don't think you have a problem, it's pretty hard to help or make something change. And usually your body is gonna slap you in the face sometime, like it did with me. It totally slapped me in the face. It was like, I'm like, I'm fine. No, you're not. Giant rash everywhere. Right?
Yeah, sometimes things have to get worse before we actually take action. But I just want to thank
Yeah.
you for establishing such a clear picture, because I haven't actually heard anybody speak about that really, really important connection so clearly. And what I often hear and see in, especially in women going through the menopause transition, is they say, like, I haven't actually changed anything. Like, I don't have more stress than I did 10 years ago. I don't have, like, I'm drinking the same amount of alcohol. I'm doing the same kind of training, but now suddenly I'm putting on the weight here, or whatever it might be that their symptoms that they're having. And I think it makes a lot of sense since you're saying that, or to me, it sounds like it's basically your body is becoming, just in general, less resilient during this time because it's so preoccupied with everything else that's going in the body, and therefore it can't handle the same stress load anymore, or those breaks of the car that you were referring to, they're just starting to wear thin. Like, your body is very resilient for a while and is like tolerating things for a while, but at some point you get to a place where you're like, whoa, 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 I've had enough. Now you gotta show me some love also, otherwise I'm gonna stop giving back. Is that kind of how you would or does that make
I
sense?
think so. Yeah, no, I think so. I think there's several ways to explain it or to make it make sense, right? But it's like, it's really easy for us to ignore those little signs of adrenal stuff before they get bad. And so that's the tricky part, is it's like, yeah, so as you're, and I think it becomes more noticeable as those sex hormones start to decline, it starts to sort of shine a light on the fact, if your body needs more work from the adrenals, but the adrenals aren't able to give more work, then things are going to be exacerbated quite significantly. right? Then it's sort of like, it's basically you're putting a load on, you're shifting a load that was in one system onto another system that can't handle the load it already has. So now it's like suddenly you see new problems. And so you're suddenly it's like, oh, well, I've got to take on this extra load. So like, sorry, thyroid, like you can't get everything you need. So I think multiple things. Of course, we've learned a lot about the perimenopause transition. There's several things, and I can't speak brilliantly to all of them. I'm really a big proponent of like supporting the hormones we have as long as we have it. I think everyone is great, is usually wants that as well. But I will say, like, we have even learned that our ability to digest fat, et cetera, is declined. Now, I have to wonder, so we learn these things in the literature or as research comes out. But my questioning brain says, but isn't that the same as being having a liver that's taxed? Because your liver makes the bile that breaks down the fatty acids. And I see a lot of hot flashes and things coming from like improving as we support and improve drainage function. And so a lot of hormone things like boil down to these couple of systems. And we talked about at the very beginning, like life is skills. Unfortunately, like no one's, hey, there's just really nowhere to learn much about the skill of like loving on these adrenals. And then also loving on drainage and detoxification, I think is like worthy. I don't know. I should really just do, I feel like it's my legacy to like talk about that topic because it's
Please,
so
yes.
freaking important to talk about. Because it's like, if you can't, even if you think about, you know, the conversation of, oh, hormones are transitioning. You know, what happens when hormones transition? They go up and then they go down. What do you think happens when they go down? They have to get detoxed out. And so if that system is congested, there's lots of places like estrogen can get stuck. If that system is congested, you're going to see an increase of symptoms overall. So even though, you know, we learn more with perimenopause and it's interesting, it's sort of like to me as a question, I'm like, doesn't that just go back to learning how to support these systems that we don't, that, you know, there's no one educating on how to support them overall, right? And I do think the best educator is our results. So I think it's helpful, you know, to be getting like collecting results, you know, and there will be some failures in there too. It's part of the story. But I think to me, life boils down to supporting these underrated systems in a strategic, systematic way, in a synergistic
Absolutely. I
way
mean,
too.
our body is such a wonderful engine, and in the end,
Symphony.
and supported in a quote unquote natural way, then we should 100% do so. Before we go into thyroid and also liver support, you touched obviously on the adrenal several times, and I want to quickly speak on quote unquote adrenal fatigue, because traditional medicine says, ah, oh, there is no such thing, it doesn't exist. And we look at more like Eastern medicine, and it's like, no, of course, adrenal fatigue does exist. So, A, where do you stand? I assume at least that you are under the impression that there is, you know, adrenal not optimal function. Or burnout, whatever we want to call it. But yeah, I do think that the issue is that since we often don't get a official clinical diagnoses, we either ourselves dismiss it or the medical community dismiss it completely. So please tell us your stance on this.
Yeah, I think this is why education is really important, because when you understand the physiology, it's like, well, actually, your doctor's adrenals aren't very good either, and they just don't know it. So unfortunately, conventionally, we are options for diagnosing adrenal issues. You will almost be dead by then. Like, it's terrible. They're essentially non-functioning at all by the time you can have a diagnosis at the doctor's office. So, you know, I mean, and that's kind of the thing. We're very good, you know, in the US at least, we're very good with emergency medicine and keeping people alive, but optimum function is up to us, in my opinion. And optimum function goes back to how to support these systems. So, my opinion on adrenal fatigue, I don't get too wrapped up in, like, I'm not like a pretentious jerk, I'd like to think, where I'm like, oh, there's no such thing as adrenal fatigue. It's just that they have a slightly more acceptable term, right? Which is HPA axis dysfunction, which is a mouthful. You know, it's hypothalamus, the brain, talking to the pituitary, talking to the adrenal axis overall, right? There's also a brain ovarian communication, as I was already talking. The brain's technically controlling everything, which is why I think kind of unpacking, and I'll just like, this is a slight tangent, but I think it's pretty important when we think about our logical high achievers, because this was me. You know, we have about 40,000 thoughts a day, and most of them aren't that helpful. Most of them are subconscious, like 5% are really logical. So really, it's our subconscious and our nervous system kind of running the show. And that's really communicating to the immune and nervous system overall. And so sometimes it's like, I don't know how things could be different. And so it's so sometimes you have to like go a little bit deeper and peel back some layers and get into some things that feel a little funky or like feel uncomfortable or sitting with those emotions. And I'm not saying there's some magic wand quick version, but I think that sometimes stories and some of these things that we're unpacking today help that. It helps kind of like unravel, start to unravel that a little bit for us, right? We'll have a bit of a journey. But your question was HPA axis dysfunction or adrenal fatigue. For sure, it's an issue. I think in general, when you have a few symptoms of an area that needs support, then there's a good sign. That's to me enough of a sign that I should maybe give that system a little bit of love. Specifically, things that the adrenals love are minerals. They love electrolytes. So, for all your fitness girlies, so important. Minerals make all enzyme function happen, which makes everything in the body happen. So, yay. But adrenals love minerals. I also think of this as generally like when this system is not working well, when this overall machine isn't working well, it's like there's cellular damage. And so I like to really support with mitochondrial support as well, which is really the fountain of youth. And then some kind of adrenal support in general. That can go all over the place. You can kind of end up on a tangent on like adaptogens versus nutrients. I like to end up starting with nutrients. There are some herbs that are a little more like loving and supportive, but even organs in general, that's usually somewhere I start people because organs are the most significant food-based form of mitochondrial nutrients, specifically heart and liver. Now, I take them in a freeze-dried form in a capsule, but you certainly can take them with food. And I would say, like, anyone with any kind of autoimmune disease at all should be loving on adrenals because every single autoimmune disease usually has a stress trigger in general. And when my mom was getting out of the hospital for an autoimmune crisis, I like ground up a lot of liver and put them in little muffin tins and froze them in pucks and then she cooked them in with ground beef or something like that, which, you know, it's got a strong flavor. So I go buy capsules, but I just wanted to let people know like there are food approaches to what I'm talking about as well. But are
I'm gonna
with
say I'm a
age.
weird person. I love liver and I love heart.
Well, you're German.
Yeah, I
So
can't.
it makes sense.
Honestly, I nearly eat liver nearly every day. So it's yeah. I have a. I do know that it's a quite acquainted taste. So I can understand if people don't like it, but I do like what you're suggesting suggesting in the sense of mixing it in with something. So like, you know, if you make a meatloaf, why don't you start like putting in 20% of whatever the ground beef is supposed to be from organ meat? You're probably not going to notice that along with all the other flavors in there or any other kind of like beef patty or something like this.
Is it easy for you to find where you live?
Here it is. Yes, actually, thankfully, there's many things I can't get here in Bolivia, but a good like beef liver is very easy, actually. Heart, not as
Okay.
much. Chicken hearts, yes, but beef hearts, not as much.
Yes, I hear that chicken hearts are like much more delicious. And I had someone who was deer hunting here this week, and he said, "Oh, I can't eat deer liver, but the heart is the best." And so it's interesting. You just have to ask. So interesting to get people's opinions on things. He's like, "I can eat cow's liver or this or that, but not deer liver." And so it's just so interesting. They all have
Yes.
apparently different flavor. You're more of an expert on that than I am.
Well, sorry, I
It's
didn't mean to interrupt
No,
you
I love
with
it.
the
I
story,
love it.
but
And
it's
I actually kind of like adore learning about cultural differences because I feel like you probably grew up eating liver and heart, right? That was like how it is. It's just part of like
absolutely.
the sausage culture as well. So I remember being in Argentina in 2008 and there was like a full platter of German sausages and what do they call it? Brain cheese or something,
Oh,
like head cheese.
yeah.
Yeah, all the things. And that's where I met my husband, actually. And so he was really teasing me at the time because I would not eat the
I do
food.
not blame you. Like I said, I have all empathy for anyone who doesn't like that kind of stuff. But I mean, no, they are so nutrient packed. It's absolutely wonderful. So I'm happy to hear that it's also supporting the adrenals.
Yeah, right. So the mitochondria are really, I think, the fountain of youth, and that's the difference between a 5-year-old and a 50-year-old is lots of mitochondria. And so there's many nutrients that are mitochondrial supportive that you might be familiar with: CoQ10, NAD plus, L-carnitine, etc. I like to go with a formula that's got a combination of things. I think sometimes when we single supplement something for a long time, we cause other issues because nutrients are antagonistic and synergistic. I think that's pretty important. I take a pretty synergistic approach. I'm also kind of trying to take as minimalist approach as possible with supplements, because I've got, in my practice, I see people coming in trialing lots of things, whack-a-moling, and we're trying to avoid whack-a-moling in general. But generally, with most supplements besides vitamin B's and C, they all have another synergistic or antagonistic thing. So if you took CoQ10 by itself for a long time, you would, very slowly decline like your copper and B5, etc. And so most people don't know that. I learned that from an extremely brilliant micronutrient mentor when we were doing micronutrient testing stuff all the time. But my point is, it sort of like goes back to synergistic is better overall. So anyway, on that note, adrenals, synergy, minerals, mitochondrial support, etc. You can see a big difference in, 3 to 6 weeks, but really healing the adrenals can take 4 to 6 months. And if you take a rest approach, you drop the cardio, you stop pushing on the gas pedal so much, it could take about a year overall to start to heal and support those adrenals, just to give people some timelines around that. But anytime someone is taking something, they feel better for a while and then feel worse, or they're having any hypersensitivity, or they're having reactions to things, usually the adrenals are part of the story overall. And so I've had plenty, I started to tell you this earlier. I don't remember if I got it said, but I've had people who come in on, and they actually did have a thyroid blood work diagnose of thyroid issues, and they were put on medication. They're like, I just feel worse on the medication. And that boils down to not having the nutrients. To go back to answer your question, how do you support the thyroid? It's a lot of nutrients. And I would say there's a little trial and error here. So first of all, to say it again, support the adrenals first, because the body just does not care about the thyroid and metabolic health, in my opinion, if the adrenals are not supported. Blood sugar is important as well. There are some specific minerals. I'm a huge proponent of appropriate food-based potassium. It's one of the most commonly depleted nutrients under stress that people don't really realize is depleted. It's not going to show up in your blood. Your body's job is to pull all the nutrients out of the tissue to make sure that it's in balance in the blood. Otherwise, you'll pass out. It has to do with your pH. Your body has to keep it normal in the blood. So blood testing is not super helpful here. You can do tissue testing. It will show it to you. But most of the people, you can pretty much tell at this, after you do that test for 5 years on everybody, you're like, oh, you look like a adrenal fatigue case. I can tell that you're going to need this. So I'm a huge fan of lots of potassium. Potassium helps the blood sugar get into the cell, helps the insulin and blood sugar work optimally. It helps the thyroid check into the cell as well. When we're thinking about thyroid, also something I already mentioned, which is liver function and drainage. Now, again, not very good testing for liver and drainage either. So you got to kind of know the symptoms. There are some indirect tests for it, and there is liver enzyme testing from a blood work perspective, but usually things are a hot mess before that looks off. So for me, some signs that the liver might be congested is you might have loose stool after cream in your coffee or high fat foods. You might not be able to jump out of bed in the morning. You might be tired. There could be multiple reasons for that, but that's one of my detox and drainage symptoms. More commonly, like specific to detox and drainage, would be sensitivity to chemicals and smells. Pretty solid sign. And sometimes people have gotten, this is so normal for them, they don't realize it. But my question is, like, do you say you have sensitive skin, or do you avoid fragrances on topicals? Then maybe. I kind of feel like this is a topic for everyone personally. I have a colleague, and she deals with some anxiety, and she kind of learned about this related to anxiety. And so she did some specific detox work, and she's like, oh, Krista, I felt night and day different. So sometimes it's things you don't think are so connected as well. Unfortunately for me, skin issues, which is clearly a drainage issue, because the skin is a drainage organ. So any kind of skin issues whatsoever, any kind of puffiness really can be that as well. But my point is that the last place the thyroid gets converted from T4 inactive to T3 active is mostly through the liver. So it's not surprising that some of the same symptoms that some of the symptoms of sluggish thyroid are dry skin or dry hair, because that makes sense from a liver perspective. If the liver isn't making bile to break down fatty acids, then you're going to have dry skin because those fatty acids make up those cell membranes of the cells in the skin. So when we're supporting thyroid, it's the adrenals. It's over here with this system because there's conversion, right? It's in general, the whole thing is run by stress and what's going on in the brain. And then from there's a bunch of nutrient cofactors. And the nutrient cofactors might be selenium, iodine, B vitamins, maybe zinc, vitamin A, etc. And for me, I look for a comprehensive formula there. I do have like feelings about iodine being supportive, but it's a little bit of a rogue concept. There's some thought leaders in this topic, but for me, this was really dramatic. All cells use iodine, and we really don't get it in our diet because we're not really eating kelp or swimming in the ocean typically. And when I think one of the issues we have, at least in the US, I don't know what it's like where you live, is we have a lot of chlorine in city water. And so, and then of course, pools and things. And so that's a halogen. So on the periodic table, on one column, you have the halogens. There's iodine, bromine, and chlorine, iodide, bromide. And so we have a lot of chlorine either in our drinking water or we're swimming in it that's displacing where the iodine would sit. And then also, there's a lot of bromide in a lot of products, but it's not labeled. It was put in flour as a dough conditioner, I think the 80s or the 90s. And so, but it's not on the label. There was an engineer that I worked with once that said his company was one of the things they did was put bromine in things. He said, it is in everything. It's in everything. So it's kind of bonkers. And so there's a lot of, and the other main thing, and this reminds me just in general, the thyroid is part of the endocrine system. So the endocrine system is very disrupted by endocrine disruptors like plastics and phthalates and some of that toxic burden stuff that hopefully, we've all addressed. But sometimes we need to be reminded or revisit that stuff sometimes that can kind of impair our overall endocrine system, which includes our thyroid and our pancreas. So big deals for blood sugar. So not shockingly, everything's super related. I don't have like a magic wand on thyroid, but my point is that when something is off there, and I will say like when it's really severe, usually people feel just pretty exhausted. They just have pretty low energy. Maybe metabolic rate has slowed down. But I always encourage people, and I'm hoping that what you take away from this podcast for sure is like everyone could support their thyroid by supporting their adrenals, by supporting their stress function, by realizing, by unpacking, their unconscious stress. And that's, I think, the big thing. I think when we start to unpack unconscious stress, everything else gets better because when we are unconsciously kind of running from thing to thing to thing, we don't know what we don't know. We're like, and for me, it was just fast talking. I was just excited. I was just talking to all my clients, trying to fit 3 hours of content into one hour. I don't know if you can pick up on that.
Well, you
And
have so
so
much wisdom to share. I absolutely love it. And yeah, I also love that you touched on the point of iodine because it's actually something that I'm quite passionate about also, and I know that's quite controversial. So, I mean, I see that in clients where they want to buy all these fancy salts, and the fancy salts are like specifically say like it's a good thing, not iodized. And I'm like, we do need iodine. Like, if we're not supplementing with it, then we do need at least your salt to be iodized. And then I had a different experience with it, with a more like a bikini bodybuilding type coach who was just giving iodine to everybody in really high doses. And that's, of course, also not good. But I like that you're pointing out that if we're working with someone, and ideally we're having testing done, et cetera, that we can and probably should include it in some kind of way, unless we are eating kelp or whatever on a regular basis, which is probably not applying to the most of us.
Yeah, I mean, it's a whole hour conversation about it. There are some testing you can do, a 24-hour iodine loading test. I've done that. I haven't ever seen one that was adequate. And then I will say that there's cofactors to that as well. Some nutrients are so interesting. They're kind of like jack of all trades. And so iodine has this antifungal component as well. Something tricky about having a sluggish thyroid is that your basal body temperature is a touch lower, almost indiscernibly, but it allows for fungal overgrowth to be a bigger issue. So for anyone who has had mold exposure stuff, it tends to be more relapsing and more prevalent. So just one of those really interesting little pearls of working with clients. But anyway, iodine can be antifungal, so you can have some reactions to things. And yeah, I think it's one of those things. It's like it just takes a little more education. But for me, it was like life changing, and every cell in the body needs iodine. For women with fibrocystic breasts, there's a lot out there on the power of iodine supporting that as well. So yeah, I mean, it's just, we're kind of like we learn in layers, right? And this is a little this got into like a little bit of a nuanced and sort of a rabbit hole there for a second, but I can't talk about thyroid without talking about iodine, but my point is like there's lots of opportunities to support that before you even get to that point in general, but it can be life-changing in a good way.
Yeah, I just really want to thank you for all the aspects that you have shared so practically. Again, like I'm all about practical takeaways, and I think if people take away from this, okay, I need to look into how can I support my thyroid the best, but starting with the adrenals, I'm also supporting the liver, and then you kind of like bound it all together with mindset and like what is my attitude to stress? Where can I perhaps reduce some stress? Even just like how am I viewing stress? I think we're seeing certain studies where it's becoming clear that it's not necessarily how much stress do I have, but like, do I think this is a good or bad stress? Am I choosing to do the stress, or is the stress placed upon me type of thing? And it's just, yeah, again, this could be a whole other podcast. So I just want to say thank you so much. I'm going to, of course, link everything in the show notes so people can and should go and check out your content and how you work with people and how you put out such wonderful free content online as well. So truly, thank you so much for your time, Krista.
Thank you so much for having me, Lisa.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Krista. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow. And remember, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go. If you're looking for premium supplements, our partner, Fat Muscle Project, has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more. And feel free to use our code NCL for your chance to win a $250 gift card every month. Thank you for listening.